You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire.
Anja Nahum is a spokesperson for the Islamic Women's Council. This group announced shortly after the March 15th terror attacks that they have been trying for years to warn authorities of the very real threats the Muslim community was facing. They have now told RNZ exclusively the report they gave to the Royal Commission of Inquiry into the shootings. They believe it's likely the Christchurch mosque attacks would never have happened if the public service, including police and security agencies, had not ignored their repeated warnings. Lillian Hanley spoke with Anja Nahum a couple of weeks ago in the lead up to the anniversary and started by asking how she was feeling about it.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to it, is what I can say. I'm kind of bracing myself. It's going to, emotionally, it will be a difficult time, and I wasn't even there. So I can't imagine what it will be like for the people that were there.
In terms of what I suppose will probably, will be a major, again, I don't even know what to expect in terms of what the government might be planning or other organisations that will be planning memorial events, I suppose. Do you think the families are in a place where they are ready to even face this? Like you've just said, you weren't there, but you're already feeling it.
Yeah, I think a lot of the families don't really want an anniversary. Religiously, it's not something we do, and emotionally, it's just going to bring up a lot of stuff. I guess they recognise that for the rest of the country, a lot of, you know, it becomes a healing thing for the country, in a sense. And so, you know, we accept that's how things go, and people would be expecting it. And if we didn't have one, then there'll be a whole other chunk of people who would feel upset that we didn't. So, I see it personally, you know, as part of our national healing process.
Do you think that is strange, that is sort of prioritised over those who are actually affected?
We're talking to people and making sure that they have support around them, and if people feel like they just want to stay at home and not do anything, then that should be fine for them. You know, just giving people the space to be where they want to be and do what they want to do and have support to get through the day. Or, you know, it will be a few days of media coverage and so on. So, I fully expect that the people that are not wanting to deal with it will shut down a lot of that stuff and just not expose themselves to it, I guess.
In terms of, like you say, that support right now, but also over the past year, I guess, do you think that, have you seen or do you think that has been adequate?
I think there are gaps. I think there are a lot of people doing good work and trying, but there's certainly gaps in terms of not having Muslim counsellors or staff or, you know, just professionals not having the expertise, existing services not having the expertise to deal with our community. Yeah, there certainly has been gaps. And I'm talking to one of the victims and they're talking about, you know, it feels like a lot of trial and error and people lose faith and so on. But having said that, there's still, as I said, good people doing, you know, working hard to try and make sure that there is support there.
And in terms of the inquiry process, how has that been going?
I think, you know, we've put in a really comprehensive submission with recommendations. I think the concern now is ensuring that the report, as much of it as possible, reaches the public sphere and that there's actually impact from what, you know, from the recommendations of the report, and there were actually some concrete changes made. I think some things are already in progress as the inquiry progresses, but I think that as they get close to reporting, that will be our next concern, is to make sure that the report isn't buried and forgotten, that there are actually some lessons learnt and some changes made.
Yeah, and in terms of everybody else also playing a role in that, like you just also mentioning a gap, I acknowledge too that in terms of our radio station, you know, there's been a gap in engaging with these communities for that entire year and that entire process. So what does that even look like going ahead?
Yeah, you know, I think another of my concerns is that people will begin to feel complacent, or that they won't, you know, they won't be the impetus. Change the longer that it goes out, you know, the longer that we wait, and that actually that we need some really deep-seated thinking about how we got to the place we did and what needs to be different and what we can be doing differently.
In terms of your this is an initiative that you started actually last year, the Inclusive Aotearoa Collective. How is that going?
Yep. Yeah, well, that's why we're in Murchison having lunch. So we're on our road trip and we're going around the country just talking to different groups of people about what their lives are like, you know, when they feel like they belong, when they feel they don't belong, and what needs to change. And, you know, they're very simple conversation starters, but we've been hearing some really deep and rich stories about what's going on for people, and it's quite amazing. So, yeah, we're doing this until around end of September, in terms of just connecting with people and communities, and we will have our online survey tool where people could either type in or voice record their thoughts. And then we'll analyse all of that and hopefully develop the strategy either by the end of this year or early next year.
Who are you sort of looking at being involved in this strategy?
So in terms of the conversations, we've just taken the broadest range of diversity. Like, we're talking to any group that we can and any combination that we can. So, you know, we're talking to ethnic groups, faith groups. We're talking to grey power and disability groups, and trying to get to rainbow communities and so on. So, like, one of the groupings we had was school leavers. One of them was food insecure people that were using a food service.
So, like, in terms of it being whoever, when people are sort of engaged in this and signing on to this COPIP, I suppose, what does that look like?
I guess, like, they can go to our website and sign up for newsletters, or say they want to volunteer. We've got some amazing volunteers. Like, we've just had people step up and write a communication strategy. We've had academics come in and say, right, we'll do literature reviews for you, and they're funding and getting that done. And, yeah, just all sorts of people just saying, how can we help? How can we get involved? And we're definitely happy to hear from you. And even if anyone can get together a group of anything from 6 to 20 people, for us to just come in and have a very informal conversation, we would love for them to get in touch.
When do you hope that strategy is out?
As I said, we're hoping by the end of the year. Like, we've got a data analyst on board, and she's really good, but she'll write a comprehensive report of the findings, which we will then use to develop the strategy. So we're hoping we can get that done by December, but if not, then definitely we hope to have it launched and publicly available on our website maybe February next year.
Because it also, I suppose, in the sense that it's, I mean, one, there is that need for it to come out, but this is not a end process, right? This is an ongoing process.
This is the first stage of the process. So once we have the strategy, we'll put it up as a publicly available document that anyone can use. But we'll be pulling out three themes from the strategy, and we'll start building work hubs or constellations around those. So we'll be trying to bring different communities and different organisations and people together to work on a common goal and to see if we can actually change the way we work to have greater impact and greater reach for the things that work well, or to share information, share resources. So that's where the longer term impact of the project for us is in working differently and having great impact around the things that that people are saying need to change.
Hmm. I just want to touch back on, I suppose, the inquiry, but also the this kind of ongoing process of dealing with what happened, because obviously what happened was a major horrific violent event, and you have also, though, the kind of behaviours, the attitudes and everything in between that has led to that, that also still exists, right? So there's also the rippling effects that this has in terms of affecting communities involved. And so in terms of acknowledging, like you say, you weren't there, but, you know, you're also affected. And all of those people that are actually now having to do the work, and were also doing the work before, having to do the work to kind of, you know, keep this issue on the table and actually keep talking about it. I guess what is the best way that people can support you?
I think, you know, it's simple things. You can start with the simple stuff of where you see something being said that isn't quite right. You know, if you're not in a position to speak back, to at least remove yourself or to try and change the conversation. If you see something happening to someone else and you're a bystander, to at least go and stand alongside that person. You don't necessarily need to get involved, depending on, you know, what the situation is, but to at least let that person in that situation know they've got some support. Anything that people can do to bring different communities together to increase interaction, because we know that the more that you get to know someone that is different from you or that you have stereotypes about, the less likely those stereotypes will be held. Like, that is the best way to actually talk to people, get together and spend time with each other, and demand more of our leaders. Absolutely be vocally demanding more of the way that things function, or the things that are said, how things are designed. Like, if you're in an organisation or corporate or not-for-profit, like, really being conscious of who might be being left out, how the way we're doing things might not be working for everyone, and what can we do about that.
That was Anjum Nahum of the Islamic Women's Council, and I'm going to read a part from the council submission to the inquiry. It is likely that, but for the failures, particularly of the security services and the police, the horrific events of March 15, 2019 might not have occurred. It is certain, but for the failure of the other public sector agencies, there would have been a greater support and protection of the Muslim community before 2019.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.